Welcome to What's Left, a weekly political discussion challenging the mainstream left. I'm Eduardo Barca, and on today's show...
And I'm Andy Lipson.
I will just introduce you.
Sorry.
On today's show, we discuss with Andy what organizing in a union looks like as he shares with us how he personally is attempting to build a stronger union at his worksite that is largely connected to his commitment to fighting for revolution and socialism.
Right. And I think that's that those things are first. Like the real thing, and I was talking to Eduardo because we have a lot of different episodes we could do. Mm-hmm. And I realized that since the episode where Greg and I spoke, the two socialists, one union, and no strikes, zero strikes, we've actually started to take steps on some of the things we talked about doing, building a Marxist cell in our school and moving steps on the election. Like we talked about the next step in our union work as it relates to what we are trying to do with our colleagues and other fellow workers at Mission was to make sure we try to have a real election. Because not many of our sites, of the 125 sites at Mission, don't really have real elections for what's called the building representative or shop steward, the person who's elected at the site to help organize the union at the site.
So before we get into those details, let's go in order so that we can have our listeners and viewers sort of see how you are doing this slowly to organize and potentially model for others, I think, if they are interested in organizing in their own union. So just for our new listeners and viewers, Andy is the co-host of What's Left, but he is also a Marxist socialist union worker in the struggle organizing for a more democratic and representative union as a science high school teacher in the United Educators of San Francisco, UESF.
Maybe the only background I'll give, I think there's this. San Francisco Unified School District represents 125 public schools in San Francisco and within that is United Educators of San Francisco, which represents about 6,000 teachers, counselors, paraprofessionals, security, librarians, wellness people. And we are at one school, Mission High School, me and Greg, as revolutionary socialists. And I, of course, I want a democratic union, but what we're really trying to do is figure out how to be Marxists, how to be revolutionaries, how not to lose that edge of keeping our eyes on the prize of revolution, of building a class struggle union at our site with the aim of making a contribution towards a general strike in San Francisco, and obviously that hopefully turning into a revolution in California, then the United States.
Yeah.
So it's like we're at the very beginning, but that's how we see what we're doing.
So please, again, check that out. Where a few episodes ago we had you and Greg, who identifies as a communist, mm-hmm. Share with us what your experience is like working as teachers and union members of UESF. Right. Well, when we were discussing over the phone what to discuss next for this week's episode, we concluded that you would share these experiences that you're currently doing at your worksite and as you attempt to organize in your union as a socialist Marxist.
Yeah.
So can you please give us some background on what you and Greg are doing as comrades running to be union representatives at your worksite union building committee, which is UBC, as I will be stating the acronym.
Well, maybe what I'll start with actually is we had two goals. Is one, to have a real election at our site. That might seem like a small thing, but I'll tell you why it's a big deal. And two was to start like kind of a Marxist cell, a group of people who consider themselves revolutionaries and want to read about it, but put these things into practice, into action. So I think we made some progress on that. Greg was able to find another teacher who had been an activist at UC Santa Cruz. Now he joined our group, and we actually did our first study group on Rosa Luxemburg's Reformer Revolution. And I'm very excited about it. We have a whole plan of reading that book together, Reform Revolution. It's an amazing book. I could say more about it later sometime. And this other teacher we met, he's very serious. He helped lead walkouts or an occupation in UC Santa Cruz. And he also is trying to figure out, he's not just like, oh, I'm found some Marxists to read Marx with, you know, or read about, you know, revolutionary ideas. He wants to put this into practice as well. And the goal, really, what one of the plans we have is to read this Reform Revolution together. And then we talked about how after we do this, we are going to read Rosa Luxemburg's other, she's written many things, but she wrote a book called The Mass Strike, which talks about how a single or a series of strikes can turn into a mass strike and how a mass strike could lead to a revolution. And so I think what we're going to do is after we do our Reform Revolution, we're going to actually propose to our site, like everyone else at our admission, we're going to let them know that me, Greg, and another person are doing a study group, and our contract is coming up in June 2020, and if people want to read about the mass strike with us, come and join us. Mm. Now, many of those people might not be Marxists. Many of those people might just be curious about it, but we think it'll be an opportunity to speak about a strike as more than just what you gain in a contract, more than what just happens. A strike is a mechanism for the working class to change the world and change themselves. And I think Rosa Luxemburg captures that in The Mass Strike. So I'm excited about that. Mm-hmm. And the other teacher who's joining us, he actually knows other teachers at other schools who might be interested in joining us. And what we've decided is later, if we can encourage them to join us, we hope to plant the seed that they could start such a thing, study groups at their own school. And that would really be major steps towards the kind of goal. Like, ultimately, what we want are Marxist cells planted throughout the district. Whether we collaborate or not, that's not that important, but it's about us trying to figure out how to be, well, I think that would be ultimately important, but really it's about people starting this stuff and figuring out how to do this at their site. And then the idea of how do we put that into practice not just at our school, but possibly around the district. And then I think we have something.
I think what you're saying, Andy, is you're not just interested in philosophizing Marxist ideas.
Right.
You're not interested in just having a study group, let's socialize, café con leche, sort of, you know, let's just eat some biscuits and tea. No, you are truly interested in reading something to apply practically out here in the world, to do something with what you are reading.
Right.
The reading can be motivational, inspirational, if it comes to some points where it is about discussion points to sort of argue and debate, but the actual science of getting down to do something materially in the workforce is what you are truly interested in.
Right. And yes. And trying to do that, trying to be engaged in the world without just getting swept up into reformism, which I think is very hard to do, particularly at the workplace. To keep our eyes on revolution without becoming irrelevant. Mm-hmm. You know, and so I think we're trying to go between those two poles.
Now, normally what I find is when people, how I was introduced with Marxist ideas was through school. Mm-hmm. And it was through academia. And I think most people are introduced to it this way.
Yeah.
And it becomes sort of a book you shelf.
Right, yeah.
And you look back on as one alternative, way, some utopian world out there that you shelf and maybe proudly label yourself to be radical in a way that's sort of trendy.
Right, and maybe when you're at a party and you meet somebody who knows something about this stuff, you can talk about it and debate some things. But I agree with you. I think that's a lot. I mean, Marxism has been taken out of the working class in general, and it's been put into the halls of academia and universities. It needs to be brought back really into the working class among workers, and hopefully how do we make it part of the discussion again? Because it's not part of the discussion. Bernie Sanders is part of the discussion, but Marxism is not part of the discussion. Dictatorship of the proletariat is not part of the discussion. The idea of class struggle being the agent of change, and you know, this is not part of the discussion. And class struggle is getting a good contract, yeah, but class struggle as the way we will change ourselves and the way we will change the world to make it the kind of world we need it to be, that's not how it's been discussed among workers. It's kind of discussed that way in the universities. And in fact, that third member who's joined our group, I was a little not sure, you know, like, because he was kind of came from that academic background. But the more I listened, I mean, he was like, he's a philosophy major, actually. And that's how he kind of came into it. He learned it at school.
Or even political science, right is right. Another major.
That is true, yeah. But the more I listened to him, the more, and the fact that he has that experience of organizing and was radicalized by some of the actions that he helped be part of at UC Santa Cruz, I'm very encouraged that we actually have the beginning of a study group organizing core for how to be revolutionaries at the work site and to build on that. Mm-hmm. But I completely agree with the general thing you've said about not the problem, but this is the terrain that Marxism has been kind of stuck in, the terrain of ideas.
Yes. You know. Yeah. Now, a criticism I have is
that... Of me? We haven't even started. How are you criticizing?
Well done. Okay. A criticism that I have is that these bodies of work can be largely inaccessible for the working class. I think teachers like yourself, mm-hmm. with college education, and most everyone actually, all of the teachers have to have a bachelor's degree at least. Mm-hmm. Most are able to sort of get exposed to some sort of it in their education.
Yeah.
But I would say more than 90% of them will be able to get through to it. Yeah. And that's people that have gone through academia.
Right.
Now, if we're talking about kitchen workers and janitors, and we're talking about meseros, how do you say, waiters, then how is this... Just I want to briefly touch on it before we continue on to your work site and what you're doing and organizing. How is it going to be accessible for the mass, I guess?
I don't have the answer for that yet, because that's all of us who are right now in the study group are college educated, you know. So, but one thing I noted is the thing we're reading is actually pretty short. And we only read like literally two pages in our first section. And I believe... Actually, I think this is something that me and our group could do, and that's something I want to do, is actually we don't even read outside the study group. We go to the study group and read together, and like read it, and then read a paragraph, and then talk about what this paragraph was saying, and why does it bring up? What do we agree with? What do we disagree with? And I could see doing something like that with people who might not have the training that we got of, it's basically literacy training, you know, that we got in school, and I could see... If we're all willing to be patient and not think like we have to burn through some text, like let's just read together and see what we get from that. And over time, maybe first people will become more comfortable reading more on their own. Mm-hmm. I think it's a waste of time to tell people to read something and then they just read it and they can barely get through it, and then they come back in their study group and they don't know what to say. Mm-hmm. Much better to actually, let's not read at all. Let's read at the study group. Mm-hmm. Read out loud. And like, what does that word mean? What are they talking about? Who's Karl Kautsky? You know, who's the German? What is GSDP? Let's talk about that.
And I will say, just to give you some things that I like about you, just some props.
Because you're about to land at me before the criticism. Well,
you think I was going to?
I did. I'm so paranoid now, man.
I should be paranoid.
You should be paranoid. I'm the one who's always jumping on you.
What I like about, just some props on you, is that when, for example, friends or community members that I know that have been interested in socialism and I have referred them to you, I have always said to them that you are accessible, that the work or the socialist arm that you can bear isn't intimidating when it's on Andy, because you can talk to him and he won't throw words at you to confuse you, to outsmart you, and play a game of chess, essentially.
Right.
Where you are truly interested in reaching out to people to organize so that they can be moved and touched and inspired by Marx.
Or utilize it. Because, like, maybe they won't get inspired, but at least they'll know these are what these set of ideas are about.
But to be able to talk about it in, I suppose, layman's terms is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, and I honestly don't think there's much value to talking about things in a non-layperson's term. You know, like, well, that academia talk is sort of very similar to when priests used to basically just read the text of the Bible and not tell it. I feel like it's actually a way that academia keeps itself shielded and keeps itself protected from criticism. Because I think if regular people can understand most things, I think quantum mechanics is very difficult to understand. There are some things in science that are, but most things are actually able to be understood if somebody would just break it down, you know. And that's one of the people, like Carl Sagan, you know, who's a scientist. I mean, that's, people love him because, and what's that dude's name? Black guy who, he's in science, he's a physicist. Neil deGrasse Tyson. Mm. People love him because he explains things in ways that make sense to them and makes you not feel stupid.
Yeah.
Because people aren't stupid. People don't know about things, but they're not stupid.
Yeah. And just quickly, I will add another one if you want to edit this out or not, but I think that science and art and anything really, if it's to live on, it has to be passed down to everyone else.
Yes.
And that has to be broken down and explained to. And I think that a scientist really knows their shit.
Yeah.
When they can break it down for a 4-year-old, for a teenager,
right,
for a college grad, and for an older person. And there's our YouTube videos on YouTube where there are scientists who explain what is CRISPR to children, to teenagers, and it's wonderful how they are able to break down for different levels.
Yeah.
And then they can have higher levels of conversations and then have maybe just simpler terms for children. Yeah. So I think it's a skill that not a lot of scientists have.
Yeah.
Anyhow, we are deviating.
Yeah.
So
although I do want to say, I ran into some Nobel scientists at Johns Hopkins, and one of the things I noticed about them is they don't talk like they're all smart. These are Nobel Prize winners, and like the two or three that I talked to, you wouldn't necessarily know that these people won Nobel Prizes. They were just simple and plain. But they asked very basic questions. Very basic questions. And whenever I gave a talk and they asked a question, I knew it was going to be like a very simple question. But that was going to have some kind of deep meaning. You know. So people who are smart don't have to impress people.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think those who are trying to impress are maybe...
Something else is going on.
Vale, está bien. We're going to...
it's a psychology episode now.
All right, so here you are with your comrade Greg, who we had on the show, and who identifies as a communist. And so you both are attempting to win enough votes in your union elections at Mission High School.
Let me say what I think we're trying to do. And Greg would say that I want to lose, okay? Because Greg wants to win. He's probably, I don't want to lose.
What do you mean?
We're having an election, right?
Uh-huh.
And Greg would say that, Andy, you're just trying, you want to lose. You want the other side to win, and then you can be in the, not running, and be from that position. He's probably right.
But why is he saying that? I think
I don't really think, like we talked about it last episode, I ultimately don't think that the members at my site, I've been working with them for 20 years, and some have come and gone, but really want revolutionary socialists stirring up the pot the way we're doing. I don't think they want that. And
what are you doing that
Because we're challenging we're challenging our own administration. We're calling out their attacks. I mean, some of this is going to get to the slogan, but the biggest thing we're doing is an injury to one is an injury to all. because we don't, we really don't let anybody get taken down by administration without some sort of comeback from us. And we are trying to actually organize the rest of our site to defend those people who are being picked off. And that's one of the things that has created debates and divisions within our, among workers, because people think we cause problems, like we're making trouble for the principal, like, and they don't agree with this. Some of them, they would say, well, these are not good teachers, or these paraprofessionals need to go, you know, and we don't agree. Like, there are some instances where people just, this is not the right place for them. But most of the instances in the work that we've done, there's been, like, they've got a crap assignment. They haven't been given the proper resources. They're new. And people who've been, like, teachers who've been working a long time, we take the best positions and we leave the crap to the rest of the other people. And when they sink to the bottom, well, let's get rid of them. Well, that's fine for an administrator, but that's not fine for us, you know, for me as a union member, to just let that happen to somebody. And as a fellow colleague, as a fellow coworker. And it's the opposite, like I said, of an injury to one is an injury to all. Mm. So it's things like that. And
Greg is saying that position is...
He probably thinks it's more us doing that is more popular than I think it is. But the most important thing to me, and what I think we've done at our site today, because we had our... We don't have the election results yet. What all we wanted to do is have an election. Because here's how it really goes down, generally. Of course... We had, you know, Lita Blanc ran for president and Susan Solomon. We're not talking about that. We're talking right at our site.
Yeah.
We're just at our school. And in that situation, most of the time what happens is one sorry person is like, I'm into the union. I'm a red. I'm an anarchist. I'll be the building rep. I'll be the shop steward. And then, oh, we'll have an election. And then no one else runs. So there's never an election, really. The person just kind of goes into the position and then does the thing. And then you don't really know if you have the backing or support of your fellow workers. And you won't find out unless you do stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think what was successful about our last year was we were so active that we basically irritated the shit out of some of our colleagues who were like, what are you doing? This is not what we want. This is not what we want from our union at our site. You know, we want something different. And what we said to them is, well, then run for. And in the past, people were like, yeah, whatever, you know, but this time they did it. And I don't agree with them, but I have to give them credit for doing it because they're putting their shit on the line this time, even though I don't agree with their platform. Mm-hmm. And that's a big deal. I will say this. I think we have 125 schools in our school district. I'll bet you no site has ever gone through this. Like, actually had an election with a slate and statements. I even had a colleague today who likes me, and she was just like, I don't like this. I don't like this election. I don't like the fact that there's this group and that group, and it's like, oh. I was like, this is wonderful. Now the working class gets to see what leadership do they want. And once they get it, they get to see what it produces. And if we're right, if they're right and they win, then okay, then Andy and Greg are going to learn something. But if we're right and we win, then everyone else learns. And if we're right and we lose, people will see what being wrong produces. You know, and the working class will only learn through this, through their own experience and their own actions. And for me, this is a mini example of that. So what I'm excited about the fact that our members were given a choice, a clear choice. I can tell you about the statements there. And I think people will hear that in this. And now I get to find out what the results are. And me and Greg put a bet for a burrito over what the vote will be, you know, so I can tell you some of those numbers. Does that make sense?
Yeah. This is interesting. Although I will say, though, that we did have at our work site when I was a former educator as well at SFUSD, and as well a union member and a union representative at my work site. I'm former. So we did have some statement, but it wasn't this organized, as you had
shown. And was there actually opposing positions?
I don't think.
See, that's
that many.
I mean, well,
just
even
maybe
if there were two.
One or two.
If there were two, then that's okay then. But I have never heard of this happening at other sites where you have one person says, this is how I vote for me because this is how I'll be building rep. No. Vote for me. This is how I'll be building rep.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've ever heard of that. Most of the time, people just kind of fall into the position and they just kind of get grandfathered in and they just keep doing it over and over and over again. And
we had that. And then I put my name in the ring.
Mm.
And then they voted out. Though I toppled over someone who had been by default for years.
Right. And did that person run against you?
She did. She put her name in the ring.
Okay, so it was a vote for Eduardo or vote for this person?
It was a... it was like...
Okay, well, that's closer to that. And yeah. And did you get to make statements about this versus that?
We did, yeah. Well, then it was written.
That
it
would be... then I stand corrected. That would be an example of... Yeah. But we have not had that at our school. And I don't think that's happened in many, many schools where there's been such a clear... Well, maybe when you hear the statements, I'll be curious if this is what things sounded like. Like, if you would see the difference. It's not about vote for Andy Lipson or vote for their side, you know. Mm. It's not about personalities. It's a vote for these positions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. Let's hear it then. Let's hear your statement.
Yeah. So this is mine and Greg's statement. We wrote a longer thing that I liked more.
Yeah, I have it.
You have it. But they didn't. They wanted us to write a condensed thing, so we had to condense our. And if you want me to expand, like, we also made some statements about this, if you want me to say something about that.
Yeah.
But here's what we wrote. Our vision. Our working conditions are our students' learning conditions. And if we don't feel safe, our students won't either. If one of us is threatened, it's a threat to our entire community. And this is the meaning of the slogan that animates our work as building reps. An injury to one is an injury to all. Here at Mission High School, that means understanding that we want a building where administration follows our lead as workers, not the other way around. We believe this orientation towards our administration is the central debate that animates this year's UBC election at Mission High School.
Right.
And the other side wrote this. This is what they wrote. We would like to shift the culture of the union towards greater participation among staff in an effort to represent all voices through increased consensus building and to work collaboratively with our new administration. We would like to hold meetings less often and at a time when more people can come with food. We would like to help teachers better understand the benefits available to them under our current contract and strengthen the union base here at Mission for a larger political movement. We feel that union representation is very important, especially in this bargaining year, and it is a bargaining year, and in the current political climate. Sincerely, the folks who run.
They're running S3.
Yeah.
And you're running S2.
Two, yeah.
I don't think I've seen it like that.
Right, and so what building representative is a single position, and that person usually, historically, it's been a single position, but it's a lot of work. And that person usually is sort of organizes the UBC, which is the kind of group of people who kind of then branch out and reach the rest of your members at a site. So you'd have maybe one building representative who's a teacher, a UBC that's 6 or 7 people, and then another 80 or 90 certificated staff or teachers, right, that they're connected to.
Yeah.
This is just the building representative, and we're basically treating a building representative like a group, like a slate. And me, Greg, and I will be a building co-building reps, and this trio will be a one-third building rep who will all take different roles as building reps around which a UBC will be organized. It's very doable.
If you were already having contentions last year, mm-hmm. and given some of the of it that I was informed of, and you shared with us your experience, do you think that you have an honest chance to win?
I expect us to lose, and I expect us the vote to be about 68% them, 32% us. That's my prediction. Greg predicts 55-45, them winning. Other people think we have a shot to win. But I think one of the things I said was that if voting for us there's going to be more conflict in the site. We're going to be pushing back on administration. Administration is going to push back on us, and it's not going to be me and Greg doing the pushing alone. We're going to call on others to try to see if we can gather forces to do that. And that's the reason that's divisive is partly because this is one of the things I talked about is most competent administrators, most competent managers will do some, if they're managing 100 workers, 33 workers they'll treat pretty well, 33 workers they'll ignore, and 33 workers they'll give garbage to, basically, and treat kind of poorly and kind of could care less about them. And some of those people are going to be targeted. And that's how you build your that's how you build your structure of control in any building. It's literally, it's very similar to a divide and rule that we talk about under imperialism and capitalism. It's a divide and rule strategy. And so if we as workers fall into that divide and rule, we lose. We just let the weak, ultimately, all of us as workers end up getting treated as the worst worker in the building. And so we have to be prepared to defend that most vulnerable worker so we can actually move forward and push administration not just on their heels, but ultimately, we would say that the organizing that would make it possible for us to take our building back and control it. That I don't think that can truly happen under capitalism. It requires a revolution. But we can do a lot more to make our administrators and managers afraid of us. And that's, I think that's a better situation than us being afraid of them.
It seems like when you use language like afraid of us, push back, follow our lead as workers, not the other way around. I suspect, Andy, that in given already the context of what you have informed me privately, right? Mm-hmm. I suspect that a lot of people see you and Greg as combative, militant.
Yes.
And maybe in the liberal agenda of San Francisco with the Trump era, people are trying to seek for love Trump's hate ideology of collaboration, and I see this, the key words they use, represent all voices and efforts, and it seems like they're not wanting to come at things in this militant, combative way.
Not with administration. I will say that I do believe this group, I think, and historically, a few of the people who are on their slate, one went to us to Oakland to join the strike last year. And I know the other one has definitely been a supporter of pushing for a strike at our school. So it's interesting. We're all in agreement about challenging the district, but we're not in agreement with challenging the emissaries of the district, who are the principals. And that I personally believe that's a weakness, that not just a weakness for them, it's a weakness for us at our site, that unless we become more convinced that we are making trouble for our principal, then we will not be able to make that kind of trouble for the district. And I think the sooner we bite down on our mouthpiece and be like, okay, we're taking these people on, the better our working conditions will be. Although it's going to be uncomfortable for a period because there's going to be conflict and principals aren't used to being challenged. Mm-hmm. But when they do get challenged, most of them ultimately are kind of bullies. And if they don't start as bullies, they have to become bullies. And the best way to do it is to punch them in the nose.
May I share something? I know this is partially your interview. May I share something? Why I think sharing my experience with a little bit about principals as well might contribute to this, because I think any teachers watching this,
and it's also true about I think any management.
Yeah, I was just going there, and I want because I will be posting this on my Facebook, and I know I have lots of teacher friends, and so I'm thinking of things that. First of all, I agree with you that I don't think workers need to be managed. Myself, I just don't believe workers need to be managed. I think I put Saul, who was my charge for 9 years, a former student of mine who I fostered. I put Saul in a school here, San Francisco Community, and every 3 years they would shift teachers to be the head teacher instead of having a principal. So they would have the math teacher eventually, after 3 years, be in the language arts teacher. They will all have this rotation.
Yeah.
And if you didn't want it, I think that you would opt out, but you would agree and everyone had to vote. There was some democratic representation, and I really liked. And even just the grades was different. It was project-based. It was different. And even if you look at some of the co-ops here in San Francisco, they're not perfect, but they have some good models, and I really like them. And even just KPFA, the way they do democratic elections and stuff, and right now they're going through some elections as well, just makes me think about this and how workers don't really need to be managed. I think there can be secretaries like
to organize paperwork and things like that. That specific role is a lot hard, right? Not everyone can do it when you're also trying to be a teacher or you're being a fast food worker or whatever. Anyhow, I'm not going into the restaurant business right now. But I think you're right, Andy, and I was having a discussion because now I'm not a former...
Which point do you think is the
right? With the principals, as you have to challenge them. Because I'm not a I'm a former worker, but I am on this side now where I'm supporting my brother with my nephew. And we have, as a parent, he is a parent, and I'm supporting him as a family advocate. I'm the uncle here. But we want to incorporate some of what we are parenting, because I co-parent with him right now, helping him, supporting him, that's a long story. But we want to have some input, we want to have some feedback, we also want to incorporate some of our rearing and talk about that with a teacher and the teacher collaborating with us. But the principal came on the first day and said because we were just observing how things are, it's a new teacher, you know, this age is very tender, 4-year-old. And the principal came and said, you have to leave. And there are no ifs, ands, and buts about it. You're going to leave. And the way the approach was and everything. And I challenged the principal. And I said, you know, this is you coming to us, telling us what to do. We are this community. And I see parents and family as primary educators and partnerships with teachers. And I hope to bring and bridge that with a teacher. And if the teacher doesn't like something, we discuss it together. But you're coming here to manage me or my brother as family members and telling us what to do. And she said, you're trying to change the philosophy and everything of this. I'm not trying to change anything, but I want to work things out with a teacher, I said to her. And the way her approach was to me, it was to manage the community, manage the teachers, manage. And
as if it was her birthright.
Right. And it's us, even parents, as we had also interviewed a parent on this episode, on this program, and teachers, to decide together collectively what we want for our kids, right? Because if I'm a parent and you're the teacher, we're both having to make decisions for this child, right? And the principal is not really, yes, they make some part of the community, but they're mostly there as hired to be managing the workers.
That's their role.
And to be managing. And the way that the approach was and the way that everything is, I pushed back and the principal finally conceded. But the point is, it's that it's about us creating that hub of nurturing environment for a child and teachers and families together working collaboratively. I don't need to be managed, and I don't think a teacher needs to be. We can speak together, and that's why I do think that we need to push back. I'm just sharing that. We can edit, cut that out however you want. But I have my experiences with principals. It does seem like they come with this, and I've worked with 4 different principals, and it does, and I'm not even counting the ones that Saul went through.
Yeah, right? I think that in all cases, in all of our principals that I've had in the last 3 years have been former teachers who've had principals who've been probably a problem, and all of them became principals and I believe even this current one, are becoming principals because they are like, I want to do it better. I want to help teachers, but I want a school to run better. But at the end of the day, it's not up to them. They're just chess pieces of the district. They don't want to admit that, but it might not be this year. It might not be next year. But in 3 years or 4 years, you do that same job. This would be true for me. If I became a principal, I would become a person who would be figuring out this system of how do I find worker allies? How do I find workers who I don't have to really manage at all? And then how do I find workers who I have to treat like shit? Who are those people? I would do the same thing. It's what happens to you from the position. Because your boss is not your fellow workers. They didn't elect you. Your job is not dependent upon them. Your job is dependent on the Board of Education, on the superintendent, and they can do and you better ultimately do things that they want, because they're going to decide your budget. They're going to decide a lot of things that decide whether the school is going to be effective. I don't think workers need management, or at least they don't need appointed management. I believe workers should elect their management.
I see.
But even if we elect our own management and keep capitalism, we're just going to be electing people who are going to be trying to figure out how to run us on the cheap.
So I guess I'll just start some prompt, because I forgot what my last question was, because I was listening to what you were saying last.
I think I just want to say something before you carry on. I think you're setting yourself up for losing, Andy.
Losing the election? Or
yeah. Winning? Do you know why?
Go ahead.
Because you all should have, maybe this is just my, and maybe I need some more information, no, but maybe you all needed to do it individually so that you can have at least you or Greg in that UBC, but doing two against three, depending on who is popular, you know, you might just...
I mean, the reality is there are two different visions.
Yeah.
There are two different visions stated there, and Greg and I are committed to that one vision, and I think that other group is committed to their other vision, exactly what they said. And it's, I don't think it's, and the good news is, it's not a, this election, I don't think it's a popularity contest. This election is, people are going to vote for what they want, whether they want the collaboration and the getting along better with administration or the challenging and fighting with administration. Yeah. They're going to vote for that. And I don't think we, I don't, for Marxists, for revolutionaries, I don't think we lose either way. If we get the majority of the vote, we're going for it. Even if it's 52% to 48%, we're going to be like, okay, here we go. You know, and yes, there's going to be a section of our staff that's going to be kind of unhappy about it. Like, but 52% said we want to challenge that principle, and we're going to move on that. And we're going to defend our members. We're going to like expose the things that are going on. There've already things have happened at our site that have not been good. You know, one of our paras was not allowed to be part of the professional development this year, and that's messed up. You know, that's not a community. You know, it's like, so we want to call that stuff out and say, like, honestly, here's how it would go down. Call that stuff out and say, that's never happening again. If you do that, we're not submitting our attendance for a week. If we hear you do that, we're not submitting our attendance for a week. And if that doesn't work, we're not putting our grades in on time at the end of the market period. So go ahead. Go ahead and mess with another pair. That's how it has to go down. That's how you train your administration to listen to you. You threaten them with saying, we're not doing our work. Go come get us all. You can't fire us all. You know, and if 55% of us did it, that screws the whole thing up. So people often complain about, teachers often complain, oh, they only listen to parents, only listen to parents. Well, that's because we're suckers. That's because we're always saying, for the kids, for the kids, for the kids, when what we should be doing is understanding if we stand up for ourselves, that's the best way to stand up for everyone, that everyone that matters. If we stand up for ourselves, but the reason we don't is we're afraid. People don't want to admit that. And so it's not just parents have power. We have complete control of that workplace if we want to do it. We don't have to have a single standardized test done in that building. We can stop it all. We can say, oh, bring your subs in. I mean, we could even not let them in the room if we wanted to. But they're not going to have enough subs to do standardized testing. So we could run principals crazy with saying, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. If you do, this is the work that's not going to get done. We're all going to show up late to class. Give us all a disciplinary whatever. Try it. You know? And so showing up late to class would be a silly one. There's other things we could really gum up their works much better.
And are you saying that the other group that is running up against you and Greg, what do you predict they will look like with their tactics? And it was interesting to me, if you can pull up quickly, I think it was something about having less meetings.
Yeah.
How is that any organizing? If you have less meetings?
Well, there's always a quality over quantity thing that could be going on, but I think we had a lot of meetings and we would report regularly on those meetings, and some of those reports were kind of controversial. I think they're kind of saying, you're not going to be hearing a bunch of reports, you know, kind of. Look, I don't want to speak. I think we stand for what we stand for. And what I would say is, what I generally think it means is, if you get in trouble with the principal, I don't know if you're going to have, if this group is going to be the best ear for you, you know. They say what they're going to say. They're going to basically try to, they trust the vision of the principal, and they believe that principal's management is good for us, and so they want to help see that through. They themselves said, we're not going to be, doormats, you know. I don't think they will be doormats, but you're either, if you're not opposing the principal, you often default into doormat position. It's hard to not be a doormat. And so it's not easy to do this thing. So I personally don't want to speak about what's going to happen. I think workers are going to see exactly what our leadership would bring or what their leadership would bring. And I don't think there's going to be any sort of misunderstanding once these get into place, which is why I think the election is so important. The election is not important for, oh, look, we won the election, so now we're moving forward. Or they won the election, so that's a disaster. The election is important because the workers at our site are going to see what their values have delivered. Because we're going to act on our thing, but I think they're going to act on their thing.
Now, I may be reading into their vision a little too much, but and it will segue into the next thing I will be asking you. But it seems here that it's about understanding their current contract and maybe negotiations next year. But I don't hear the message that I heard in your original draft, which is, if I may share, our commitment to build a stronger union at our site is connected to our commitment to fighting for revolution and socialism. That language there isn't commonly, at least not in my 13 years of being at SFUSD when I was working there, is not the language I would see even for elections at the principal union.
Right. Right.
It's not the main union, I mean to say, principal sindicato. You're here, and actually, why don't you read the entire draft if it's all right? Or you?
I was going to say that I really do wish we could have been able to use that whole draft to give to people. And we still may be able to send it to people just to give people a sense of where we're coming from.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to then say, well, we're going to send you this. Since they only really let us do a shorter thing, we just had to condense it. But in our statements, well, I certainly said that, look, we see this as part of the possibility of making revolutionary change. And this is why we're doing this. We don't think workers under capitalism can really experience good managers. The only way we're going to actually get that and good schools is if we take this whole system down and make a revolution. I basically said essentially that as what's animating this run. You know, that's why we're fighting the principals, because we need to fight our bosses, and our bosses are connected to these bosses, and we need to learn how to fight them.
In your draft, you really clearly outlined that I'm not interested just in organizing at this work site. I'm interested in collaborating with other work sites and then slowly organizing for a strike that would ultimately shut down the city.
Correct.
As we ally with other unions.
If we could do that, yes. That would be the goal.
And we should mention that the Kaiser workers are striking in October.
They voted to strike.
They voted to strike, excuse me.
Voting to strike and going on strike are two different things, as our union is.
Okay.
Because the United Auto Workers also voted to strike. Okay. But we'll see if they go on strike. That's a separate thing.
Okay, we'll touch on that on another time. So, like I was saying, the language in your statement isn't anything I have seen in former SFUSD. Educators, and I suspect that if you even gave them this, they would be bewildered. It's a socialism in their revolution, the language you use.
I think it would be a little bracing, but most people know we're the communists at the site.
That's what I mean. I presume folks aren't signing up to be educators with the intent of toppling the state here.
Yeah.
Right? I think they're... Yeah.
Correct.
Let's just be honest, Andy. Yes. I know the climate teaches. I have had my pulse there before.
Yes.
And I can say that I think most are just content with having a grievance through with a principle.
I mean, I think their politics play out in how they educate students. And they think of their politics as through the lens of, so the social justice politics are a lot about, I'm going to teach my students about a liberated mindset, you know. But I don't think that works unless you are fighting for your own liberation.
Yourself. Yes. Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, I think it's false, actually. I mean, even as much as you want to teach kids liberation, if you don't show them how you liberate yourself in relationship to management and capitalism and your bosses, then I don't think you can teach your students anything about that. Mm. I think all you can give them is words.
Let's transition into what you're saying, because many times on this program we have discussed what to do beyond voting. Mm-hmm. No?
And now all of a sudden I'm into votes, huh? Look at me now.
What, and beyond voting, when we refer to voting, we're, you know,
bourgeois election.
For viewer and our listeners, Andy doesn't vote for the president, let's say, right?
Yeah, right.
Or federal elections. I mean, you vote for...
I write in Eduardo.
You vote for democratic representation at your union, but not federally, right?
Yeah. Some propositions. No on the sugar tax. I voted no on the sugar
tax. We're not just talking about, that's right. No. nanny policies.
Well, that's one we're going to
get. We're going to get into that in the future episode. Yeah. So we've discussed here what to do beyond voting, what it would look like and what it would take to organize a socialist working class revolution. Mm-hmm. Would you say that socialists tend to embrace a general strike as an instrument for obtaining political concessions?
Say that one more time.
Would you say that socialists tend to embrace a general strike as an instrument for obtaining political concessions, or essentially, eventually, topple down the state to change the system?
I would say, unfortunately, most socialists don't even embrace the general strike. I think most socialists currently.
Or the ideology, at least, I suppose.
Well, embrace the idea of taking
political... Strike as an instrument.
The biggest agent of change for the post-socialists right now are the Democratic Socialists of America. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the five, the squad, Bernie Sanders. That's where most post-socialists think that change is happening, as workers hear socialist ideas that come from them, and they think that workers are getting pushed left or pulled left by the statements of Sanders or Alexandria Ocasio, and maybe some of the degree to which they oppose Trump. You know, socialists support strikes, but most of them talk about what strikes can do to get you a better contract and give workers confidence in themselves. They talk about it mostly that way. Most socialists don't talk about strikes as a weapon of class war, and a class war that will need to be won by defeating the capitalist and imposing our will on them, establishing what, again, the dictatorship of the proletariat, using working class democracy to eradicate bourgeois democracy and create new institutions, new democratic institutions run completely by workers through the strike. Through the strike that grows into a general strike and the sorts of organizations you need for that, as you heard about in Seattle, and
Wisconsin, I was reading as well.
Mm. Well, there have been general strikes in this.
There have been many, and even in Paris.
Right. And they've required some level of organization, never gotten to the point of like workers' councils that have been formed in Chile or Soviet Union, or Iran even had what are called shuras, I think, during the revolutionary phase when the Shah was being taken down. So we've never really had something like that.
Those in the USA?
In the USA, yeah, as far as I know. Mm. But we socialists know about those things. We relegate those things to our newspapers, to our magazines. We don't use that as a rallying point to talk to our fellow workers and say, this is what we should be going for. We don't care about the contract. We don't care. What we want is revolution.
But to achieve that revolution, though, is historically and ideologically the way to get there, using this tool of strike.
Yes. Working class.
Whether they do it or not,
right,
is not. But the Marxist idea,
yes,
I'm supposing,
yes,
is... What would he say had he been alive to be able to achieve this revolution?
I think he would have said that the only way that workers can learn about what they are capable of is through their own experience, and their own experience in class struggle. And that class struggle he's talking about is the struggle of organizing collective together as workers to oppose the people above you. Mm. And that is how workers learn what they are capable of. They don't learn it by somebody telling them that or somebody giving them inspiration. They learn that inspiration out of their own actions.
And stop working.
And stop working, collectively. And then if they if the stop working gets generalized enough and you need stuff, then you can decide what does get made, not the boss. You can decide what gets run. And that's what we're talking again about, the 1919 mm-hmm. general strike in Seattle. So decisions like that started to get made. But that was being made by workers, not bosses.
Before I carry on, what would you consider Cesar Chavez huelga strike, which is huelga in Spanish?
Yeah.
Would you consider that historically as a in part of history of having had the mandate changes?
Yeah.
They were reformists, yes.
Yeah.
But ultimately, their demands were met.
Yes. But he wasn't revolutionary.
They were reformist demands, and they could have done something else, right?
But and he helped keep the struggle. Ultimately, he did help hold the struggle back as well. Yeah,
because it was for years, and you know, I think the grapes, I think, were for 4 years.
Yeah,
that's a long time.
That's the other thing is you can't have. There's look, revolution will take a period of a week or two. You know, the insurrection part. And even you can't just go on for an indefinite strike. Your strike has to grow in strength. It is not true. It's one day longer, one day stronger. You know, you're not getting paid. There's all sorts of things that are hard about it. You're stronger when the capitalist is more afraid of what you're going to do tomorrow.
But what was astonishing, Andy, is that he did actually organize to take care of the workers.
Yes.
They organized, their own credit union.
Yes.
They organized to have food for the workers that were on striking, to take care of them, a place of lodging. I mean, you know, we're in celebration of Labor Day, which happened last Monday.
Right.
And I was listening to the Cesar Chavez speech and even the history behind it just last Monday. So I'm just saying that it's not revolutionary because they didn't, in my point of view, the demands were not further to demand complete change of how things were going to run for workers. It was, what I mean is they weren't toppling any state here. They were governing and causing that and sort of revolution that a socialist would create. But the demands were met even if they were reformist.
Right. And now they've been rolled back.
Yes.
So that's how capitalism
this
rolls.
Is good that you said that.
You know,
yeah.
So,
in a capitalist system, but, that's what happened.
Yeah, and that's how it just unfortunately, that's how it works. And it was kind of like the stuff you were bringing up with the people at Standing Rock or, you know, these struggles, of course, they're important, but let's take them seriously. And let's assume that the people who are in that struggle are fighting to win. Because if you're fighting to win, then the news is, you will not win unless this struggle goes beyond this single place here and goes on for the system. Mm. So that's just the rules, because capitalism's got the whole thing under wraps.
Yeah. We have had a guest of ours has been Kenny Cepeda, and he joined us for two episodes on Venezuela. And
he swallowed a giant red pill because he's been reading a lot of like revolutionary stuff and things like that. So he's going mad for revolution now.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I think is great.
So he had a few questions, and just looking in the questions he asked Kenny, I think Andy has answered a lot of your questions. So here's one that I think that has not been answered, and I'll read it as he posed it.
Yeah.
In light of the wave of teacher strikes over the past 2 years, how have Mission High School teachers changed their views on the possibility of striking as a tool?
I honestly believe that despite the differences over our feeling about challenging our principal, I really believe our teachers at our school are much more ready to strike. Like, who are much less afraid of striking. They're much more like, why are we striking? Shouldn't we be striking? Like, it used to be almost, it felt like a forbidden word. And it's not. I think it's helped that we've said it, me and Greg and others. But the biggest thing that's made a difference is what people have done. And people in these red states. Like, I think it's almost an embarrassment to people in blue states that all these red state people are running around making trouble. And the blue state people are being like, oh, okay, I'm just not going to do anything. I'll vote for this Democrat. You know, it's sad. Now, and I think people are like actually feeling both emboldened and a sense of like, geez, shouldn't we be doing this? So it's had a big impact. It's had a big impact. Secondly, the work that we did in the solidarity support and hearing from teachers from LA or teachers from Oakland and going to the picket line, you know, now even though the person's on the other slate, she's looking to organize, you know, and I think she'll be down for pushing for a strike. I do believe that. Once we go on strike, I think then the whole deck gets resorted. We will see what people are about. We'll see what I'm about. We'll see what Greg's about. We'll see what these other people are about. And we'll see what's real and what's just missed, you know? But we need to get there. Because and that is the part that it really is. I do feel like we need to have a strike just so we can have the experience and see each other really and see what solidarity we really have, see what solidarity we don't have, and know and learn where our starting point is. In the same way that I feel like this election lets us learn something, a strike will be another area where we learn. It's not going to be good news. We haven't struck in a long time, so we're going to find out that our muscles are much atrophied. But we need to get up and walk around the room and see where we stumble.
Exciting. I hope that you will tell us the results of the election.
Yes, I will do that. And probably we shouldn't do a whole episode on it necessarily. I think the next time
update.
Yeah, like maybe as if there's something that goes with our study group and something like that. But I will definitely next week, I think we'll know and we'll say, you know. Do you have a prediction what the numbers are going to be?
Andy.
I'm curious because you believe we're going to lose and I'm with you, you know.
I don't think you're going to.
Oh, okay. So what's the numbers?
Oh, I don't know.
90-10, like 90% for the other side and 10% for us?
I think that...
I would be disappointing. I think
that you're going to lose by a few margins.
Ooh!
You know why? Because I think that... And one question I was going to ask you was, what is different this time from having ran differently previously? Because you have been a union representative for a long time.
Mm. But we've never had an election.
Oh, right. Yeah. Well, that is a difference. Yeah. But... the reason why I think the margins will be small is because people know you and because you have been that defaulted union representative. Mm. And I think people go with what they are comfortable sometimes. Or they know you are a fighter and they know that you will represent them. And they may have had experiences with you where you did stand up for them. And they realize, though there might be contention in the classroom, outside the classroom, when it comes down to who has my back, I think from having spoken with two other teachers who have worked with you, and you don't know who have told me things.
Oh my gosh. Names. Give me names now.
They realize, oh, this socialist stuff over here with this guy, he's actually in it, right? Mm. Like really in it, they have mentioned.
Mm.
And they can depend on you. Mm. So I think that those people who have had the experience with you will vote for you. Mm. I think there are many newcomers and they're into this identity politics ideas. And I'm black, a white person doesn't represent me, I'm brown, you don't look like me, you don't represent me. So, you know, this whole I see white, male, patriotic, cisgender male here preaching to me and still mansplaining and manspreading and you know, and then I talk about I need to have an ally, you being so honest, I don't believe in privilege. But then they feel you're not an ally because they're not seeing you. They are seeing you are here or you are here. You're not for this. When you are clearly for Black Lives Matter, but they don't think you are.
Mm-hmm.
Because the minute you say something like that, you're not Black Lives Matter.
Yeah, yeah.
When we have had episodes where, my gosh, the things you say. But the point is, positive things you say. But the point being is that I think that is unfortunately that how we get caught up in the liberal agenda mess.
Mm.
And we don't really have what we're doing here on What's Left, which is what I want to make our have our listeners and viewers really understand, that here on What's Left, we discuss contentious points on the left, and we're not afraid to talk about them. And if we are, we have courage. Mm. What is courage without fear, anyhow?
Mm-hmm.
So to have those difficult, challenging discussions, which I don't think many people on the left are willing to have.
Yes.
So that's why I think there'll be margins.
Interesting. So you're thinking closer than what I'm thinking. Okay, cool. Let's see. We will see.
All right. Well, this was in honor of Labor Day.
Yeah, exactly. Last Monday. Exactly, yeah.
Thank you. This concludes our episode for tonight, and we hope that you have made it this far.
Yeah.
Please check us out on our 5 platforms. We are on BitChute, Stitcher, Google Play, iTunes, and iTunes Podcast, and YouTube. Please rate, review, subscribe, and best of all, share with your family and community. And check us out next week.
We'll see you next week.
Ciao.
Climate change is a hoax. Oh, Building 7. Did you hear what happened with Building 7?
What's happened?
There was a study done by a group of like research scientists in like Alaska or something like that. They said the only way Building 7 could have gone down was by collapse of all the columns simultaneously, not a fire.
That will be a separate episode. I cannot deny or confirm at the moment.
Epstein was murdered, and 9/11 was an inside job.
You don't know 100%.
97%.
Okay, good. We can compromise.
All right.